As is very often the case with the readings for the Sunday Mass, the first reading connects strongly with the Gospel. In fact, quite often it leads into preparing the Gospel. So today we have a bit of a mountain climb ahead of us, because everything takes place on mountains in the first reading and in the Gospel. But the children, particularly if they were taking close notice, would find the first reading interesting, because once we start talking about cutting animals in half, most people's ears pin back and they heighten their sensitivity a little bit. I might just explain that in pre-biblical days, when a treaty was undertaken, the treaty was done by cutting an animal in half, or several animals in half, and then placing one half of the animal here and the other half of the animal there. And then both parties, what we would say today, the signatories to the treaty, would then walk between the two halved animals. And the intent behind that rather gruesome walk is that should either party break the treaty that they have taken on, may they be treated as these animals are treated. That is, they would not only be killed, but they would be split in two. They would not be united. So it has a couple of layers of severity in there. And that's what you're getting with the conversation and the action between the Lord and between Abram in the first reading. But Abram didn't walk through the split animals, only God did. It was a unilateral, it was a one-way covenant which asked respect. So the difference here is that we're talking about a covenant, not a contract. I used the word treaty before. Covenant is written with the heart. Contract is written with the hand. And so God is really demonstrating his love for Abram and therefore his descendants. In the Gospel, we have Luke's account of the Transfiguration, and you'll see a couple of the same images start to come forward again. You'll have the mountain, the first mountain with Abram with Sinai, but you'll have the mountain here, this time it's Tabor, and then you will have the shadow of the Lord come down as well, the same as the shadow, the mist that passed through the split animals. And so Luke is using the same imagery to talk about a covenant, but there won't be the blood of animals, it is the blood of Jesus that is going to ultimately seal this covenant, and that will take place in Jerusalem. So Luke is using the Transfiguration event to set his listener's mind on the path that Jesus is about to undertake. Last week we had the temptation, and now he starts his mission and is headed for Jerusalem. And Jerusalem, whenever Jerusalem is mentioned in the Gospels, we know that it's about the Easter event. So it is going to be about passion and it is going to be about blood. Now, one of the interesting things I find with the Transfiguration story, that it's mentioned almost word for word in Mark's Gospel, the first Gospel that we have, and Matthew has copied it almost word for word, and Luke has also put it in there, and it's very, very similar. The only difference really between Luke and Matthew and Mark's version is that they start off with 6 days later. You don't get that in your text. But Luke starts off with 8 days later. A little finery. But then I asked myself, why doesn't the Transfiguration get mentioned in John's Gospel? Because the details of the Transfiguration, as you've just heard again, are the same pretty much in the three synoptic Gospels. But not doesn't get a mention in John's Gospel, which was written last and written latest. Some of you might also be saying, but wasn't John there? Because we know in all three Gospels that Jesus took with him Peter, James and John. John was there at the Transfiguration, yet he doesn't put it in his Gospel. Now, some of you might think, well, so. For me, that's a real point of curiosity. Peter, James and John were there. Matthew, Mark and Luke were not there. yet they recorded the event. And only John, who was there, doesn't record it. So I suspect that for John, the transfiguration event is, as some scholars would say, is actually woven through the whole of his gospel. Because the transfiguration event is about Jesus, Son of God, his glory being seen, and the disciples witnessing that. The transfiguration event was for Jesus, not for the disciples. The flow-on effect of this for Jesus was when God said, "This is my son, listen to him." And that's the key that unlocks the invitation for us to get inside the transfiguration event. Most of us won't be going up mountains today. Most of us won't see mist today. Most of us certainly will not see animals cut in half. But we are going to be asked, and we're asked now, to listen to him. So for the first Christians, the early church, this significant event, even with its symbolism, was a very real encounter for them and an invitation for them to come close and to listen. Place it inside the Lenten journey, where week two into Lent, then we are asked, after facing the temptations of last weekend, which is really setting the scene for Lent, we're asked now to journey to Jerusalem, the Easter event, but listen, truly listen to God. So perhaps at this time in our Lenten journey, let's start to detox ourselves of the clutter that is in our life, the noise that is in our life, and cue white cockatoos. The noise that we invite into our life, not the noise that God thrusts on us like the white cockatoos. For most of us, to be able to listen, to truly listen, is a real struggle. If we are a young family and we have young children, they will always dominate the sound waves. There was an opportunity there, you guys. Can you pinch one of them? You're shushing them. But it's a struggle to get that silence. So to listen is not an easy thing. And perhaps that's why Jesus takes Peter, James and John up the mountain to get away from the clutter. And then God descends in the mist and in the fog, and then the silence is actually physically forced upon them because they only see the brightness of Jesus, what we know as the glory. They also see the Elijah and Moses. And clearly, through all three Gospels that mention the transfiguration, that's the law is Moses and all of the prophets is Elijah. That now ends with Jesus. So there is some action happening there, but there's a conversation happening. We don't hear Jesus say anything. We hear Peter say something which is rather silly. He loves this moment and he wants to Kodak this moment. He wants to keep it. So let's build a couple of tents. But all God is asking is of the disciples to listen to him. And that will be our struggle. Now, the third mountain, of course, that we're headed to from today is actually the Mount of Calvary. So we start off with Sinai and Abraham. We start then with Mount Tabor, with the disciples, and then we end up in Jerusalem on Calvary. So I suppose at Mount Tabor, it's Peter's words that capture our mind when we really listen, and it's him that says, and we often say this in our life, it is good for us to be here. Let's hang on to this. It's great. It's good for us to be here. But by the time we move with Jesus to Calvary and we listen, we're going to have to start saying with Jesus, "Thy will be done." There's a different conversation taking place on each of the mountains of our life. It is good for us to be here, But in the pain of our life, we sometimes have to listen to God and we need to reflect on thy will be done. God does not cause the horror in the world. He witnesses it along with us. And we, the flawed human race, are the primary cause of the pain in our world. We are the ones that inflict the noise, the clutter, and the pain. We therefore have the ability to remove the noise, the clutter, and the pain. And that is the rest of our mission, I believe, through Lent. To be still, whatever mountain you may feel you are sitting on at the moment, and to truly try to listen to God, and perhaps, especially in the week that we've had this week, to say to our God, with an open heart, not with a forced hand, thy will be done.